The Musicians Hall of Fame and Museum might be the most out-of-the-way, centrally located attraction in Nashville. 6 blocks from the tourist throngs on Lower Broadway, next-door neighbor to the Tennessee State Capitol and the Davidson County Courthouse, it's easy to miss. But seriously, you can't miss it. It's on the lower floor of a 1960s flying saucer of a building known as Municipal Auditorium, Nashville's oldest and quirkiest concert and roller derby venue. So finding it is possible, and for any music fan, hardcore or casual, it promises a surprising and revealing journey. Its mission, conceived as a passion project 10 years ago by veteran Nashville guitar dealer and songwriter Joe Chambers, is to shift the spotlight from stars to musicians. The instruments and memorabilia on display prove the point that without session and road musicians playing bass, keys, horns, and other instruments, songs would remain static sketches and great records would never get made. They say, come see what you've heard. Since moving to this historic space 4 years ago, the hall has been in constant change, upgrading and solidifying its permanent place in the new downtown. I hadn't been in a long time myself, so I called up my friend Jay McDowell, multimedia curator, to see what's going on, what's new, and what's coming up under the Municipal Dome. He takes me right away to a set of drums sitting next to an oversized poster of a certain historic music festival.
This is Michael Shreve's drum set. It's his 1967 Ludwig kit that he used at Woodstock. It's on the first two Santana albums. So you've heard these drums on Oye Como Va and Evil Ways and Black Magic Woman. They were on the Ed Sullivan Show when Santana made their first appearance. They were at Altamont when they opened for the Stones. And now they live here in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's amazing to see how many people were affected by this drum set. Not just the baby boomers, but kids that come through here and ooh and ah over it. And I had a kid in his early 20s the other day going on and on about how this was the reason that he plays drums today. He saw that Woodstock movie and that crazy drum solo that Michael Shreve did.
The museum is divided not by genre or chronology, but by places, music cities, and centers with recording studios that became magnets for musicians. Muscle Shoals, Motown.
And this is the Wrecking Crew in Los Angeles. Like I said, we kind of started with Hal Blaine's drums.
And there you go, Hal Blaine playing on one of his scores of hit records, the famous Byrds cover of Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man. Hal Blaine and the Wrecking Crew made up an exclusive cadre of studio musicians who dominated Los Angeles pop recordings in the 60s and 70s.
Again, that was a magnet. It made these other musicians say, wow, you got Hal's, like, I could be in the same exhibit with Hal Blaine, whether it's Glenn Campbell or Tommy Tedesco. That's the guitar that was on the theme from MASH, to Mike DC, to Larry Nechtel, to Joe Osborne, Carol Kay, and just all these amazing musicians.
Elsewhere in the Los Angeles case, a visitor will see a hand-painted road case from the Desert Rose Band, quaint old analog effects pedals used by Nashvillian David Hungate in his years with Toto. A guitar and sport coat from Glenn Campbell are here because before he was a star, he was a go-to guitar player in the Wrecking Crew. And in a corner, a piece truly for the gearhead.
This is the reverb unit that was on the song Wipeout by the Safaris. Bob Berryhill said he was walking along outside the studio and found some old driftwood, and just that's what he cracked at the beginning of that song, and it's through this, through all the reverb and everything, and then the guitar comes in. And no other sound like it. You can't miss it when it comes on the radio. It's a unassuming little box. It looks like a Fender amplifier head. My favorite thing about it is the visitors to the museum have one of two reactions to this. Either they pause for a few seconds and look at it and move on, or they freak out and can't believe that that's the reverb unit from Wipeout.
Jay McDowell must be one of the only curators in the world who's also the subject of one of the exhibits in his museum. He spent a decade in one of the most influential and hot swinging honky-tonk bands in modern history, BR549. The band has its own corner in the Musicians Hall of Fame. Later, I sat down with Jay in a quieter environment to ask about his transition from musician to caretaker of musical history, and here's a portion of our conversation.
Yeah, I am the luckiest guy in the world. I lucked into a great band and got to play and live out my dreams with that. Then when I wanted to start a family and stay home in Nashville, I just transitioned into the video world with the help of Sony Records, our label at the time, and started doing video work. And now I have three kids and I stay off the road. And the video work through Sony led me to Joe Chambers, who was starting the Musicians Hall of Fame. And he needed somebody that could help him with the video work for the exhibits. And he had interviewed a lot of the key players for the museum. He would enjoy talking with them and shooting the interview, but then didn't want to spend any time messing with the tape or the footage. And so he kind of brought me on board to go through a mountain of footage, which I loved. Yes, put me in a dark room watching these interviews and cataloging them and getting them in shape and using them for exhibits.
How actively interested had you been in history of American music when you were in your musician years? I imagine it played a role and that you seem you're that type of guy, but it'd
Absolutely.
Be interesting to feel that, accelerate it, and give and have a place to do it from and for.
Absolutely. It, being in a band like BR549, that's what we were about, was championing the roots of country music and feeling like Nashville had lost its way musically and wanting to do something about it. And you take on that fight. There are times when you feel like you're having success and you're making a difference and people are listening. And then there are times when you feel like, why do I bother? It's not going to change. What's happening is happening. And so I still go with that ebb and flow of feelings that we have to protect the heritage of Nashville and, you know, we can't let it all slip away. And then there's days that I think, well, it's going to change and it's going to do what it does. But in that regard, it's all still the same. I don't feel like anything has changed in my life, that I'm still fighting that fight.
What terrain of the story of music has been most opened up to you that you've learned the most about from scratch by being here?
Oh, that's easy. The Philly soul stuff, the Gamble and Huff things. Growing up, I mean, it's all around us. So, you know, I've heard those songs my whole life, but it wasn't my bread and butter. I didn't know that stuff inside and out. And I'm such a music fan. Like I said, growing up, I was digging back, you know, when that music was happening in the 70s, I was spending my energy digging back into the Carl Perkins and the Gene Vincent stuff, and mm-hmm. and that stuff was, again, you know, you'd hear the songs around you and they were hits. And so, you know, whether it's Lou Rawls or Teddy Pendergrass or the Stylistics or the Spinners. Mm-hmm. So now at the museum, when we got that piano from Sigma Sound Studios in Philly, you know, it wasn't on my radar. I didn't know that stuff. And so to dig in and learn it and learn about those musicians and what they did, and I hear it and it's undeniable. It's good stuff.
Before I go, Jay takes me to see what's next in the Musicians Hall of Fame. It's part of a large new section that's under construction, and it's one of the most important vehicles in the history of American music.
This is Brian Ahern's Anactron studio truck that recorded 40 gold and platinum records. It was involved in mixing and for different projects that are into the hundreds for sure. But most of Emmylou Harris's records, Stardust by Willie Nelson, The Rose by Bette Midler. His concept was to be able to drive this truck around anywhere in North America and not only record live events, but it could be used as a control room. He could pull it up to Emmylou Harris's house and they could be recording in the living room and run the cables out and use it as a control room. But there's also records that were entirely recorded within this truck as well, and, you know, start to finish.
From the outside, it looks like a boxier version of a silver Airstream camper. But what's exciting is that when it opens in early 2018, visitors will be able to walk through its close quarters and see its rooms and storage lockers and a similar mixing console to the one used to make those albums. And in the back, a tiny studio with a false wall, and the kind of discovery that makes a museum curator's heart skip a beat.
Now, the most exciting thing happened the other day. Brian said, we had to put up this cabinet here. Over here, he says, but before we did that, Johnny Cash signed that wall over there. So Joe had me and his son start ripping out the wall to see if we could find this Johnny Cash autograph. And it was funny to us because we're pulling out stuff and ripping out nails. And you're wondering if there's even going to, you know, is it behind glue? Is it, you know, is it, are we even going to come across anything? But anyway, we got that barrier out and there was some butcher paper taped up to the wall. It was dusty and there's all kinds of stuff floating in the air, and we ripped back that butcher paper and there's like 40 signatures, and there's Johnny Cash, and there's Buck Owens, Kris Kristofferson, Rodney Crowell, Ricky Skaggs, and Hank DeVito, and Emery Gordy Jr., and just a ton of other names, and these other names that I don't even know some of these people, and I'm anxious for Brian to give me some backstory on who some of these people are. But it felt like following a treasure map. We were ripping out this stuff and it was dirty and messy, and the whole time we didn't even know if there would be a payoff. And when we found it, it was amazing. It's just a little time capsule here tucked away in the corner of the studio.
Jay McDowell will almost certainly be here for many years to come digging up similar treasures.